Support for the Media Project comes from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a Master of Arts in Communications to advance careers in media, PR, and journalism. Fuller part-time options, 518-454-5143. From Northeast Public Radio, this is the Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Our idiosyncratic little radio show is on the air here, folks. Here
what does that mean, idiosyncratic?
I know it's a big word for a guy with a PhD, but I expect you to understand this kind of thing. Welcome. That was Dr. Alan Chartok, CEO of Northeast Public Radio, the only man in the room with a PhD.
And the only man in the room who had a back operation 1 week ago.
What a guy.
Why I didn't join you.
Here you are.
Wow.
Yeah.
And Paul Conti is here, professor of journalism at the College of St. Rose in Albany. And
I'm Rex Smith. No expertise in back surgery.
And I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union in Albany. So how are you feeling, by the way, while we're here?
I'm feeling like, beep.
He's leaning forward. He's not like this. He's like this. So it must not be great.
Oh, well, what can you do?
Feel better soon.
We do hope you'll feel better soon. And before we do anything else, we have to welcome WHUD-FM in the Hudson Valley and WYPL in Memphis, Tennessee, who are airing this show for the first time.
Maybe they'll send us some ribs up here.
Some ribs. Let's hear it.
Memphis ribs.
Good thing. So we originate here in Albany, New York, in Central Avenue in the state capitol, just a mile up from the lovely state capitol of Albany. Y'all down in Memphis to come up
y'all.
And see us, if you would. So we begin by saying that Julius writes and says, what does the Media Project, what do the media projectors, Tiles, us, think about the claim this week that the media didn't give balanced coverage to the SCOTUS ruling on the Defense of Marriage Act? That is, that the Defense of Marriage Act proponents didn't get sufficient coverage. Any thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing I would want to say for our listeners, some of whom may not know what SCOTUS is and confuse it with male anatomy.
this show is really earthy sometimes.
Supreme Court of the United States. That's right. Right. Not to be confused with POTUS and SLOTUS. Yeah. Yes. Uh-huh. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what was the question again?
How about that SCOTUS coverage? At least I didn't say DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. SCOTUS, DOMA, and hippity-dippity-doo. So what do you think there, professors? Paul,
you want me to go
first?
Yeah, I think the status quo was that DOMA defined marriage as one thing, and the Supreme Court changed it. So news being what is unexpected or change, the change side of the argument gets more coverage.
Do I hear a little negativity in your voice? I mean, you work for a Catholic institution.
I do.
It's the College of St. Rose. And, you say, well, they just changed it. They looked at the Constitution and it wasn't consistent with the Constitution. Yeah. And I say for once, bravo for them.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I don't have a problem with the change. No, I'm just saying, in terms of Rex's question, did one side of the story get covered more than another side, the side that got the change got covered more than the side that was the status quo up to that point, which had gotten more coverage.
You know what's interesting to me, Rex and Paul, no offense meant by any comment I ever make.
None taken. We're not listening.
Yeah. And I believe that, by the way. Okay, so no. The one thing that's interesting to me is who becomes the newsmaker. And the newsmaker in this case, of course, is Justice Kennedy, because he's the so-called swing vote. There are four conservatives, and there are basically four. And he's, by the way, conservative, basically, Kennedy is. So that's 5-4, and those are the rulings that you get. But he's also a bit of a libertarian. So the press, trained well, knows to watch Kennedy. And Kennedy, in this case, comes out on the side of doing away with DOMA. Now, what's fascinating to me from a sociological perspective is that there was a massive change in the United States that was not well covered by the press. In other words, I think what happened was that when the Defense of Marriage Act was passed, the people who passed it in the United States Congress, the right wing and the rest, thought, okay, this is where the American people are. But it turned out they weren't. And it turned out especially the young demographic in the United States had no idea why people who were gay or were lesbian were being discriminated against. So this is where your point, Rex, that you always make, and so well, for, you know, such a brilliant man as yourself, is that the press's job is to interpret, to do more than just give you the facts of what happened, but to explain what's happened. And I think, frankly, we fell down on that.
Two thoughts about that. Well, first, to go back to the initial question, I take issue with Paul somewhat on this. I think that the coverage did tend to reflect a generally more interest in those who supported the change, in part because of the emotional response. You know, it is hard to cover something and not see the emotion of it and write about it. And when you see people crying on the steps of the Supreme Court with joy, when you see the elation that came to people as a result of this ruling, that does give you an emotional wedge that makes the coverage more potent. And so I think that it's hard to avoid that, and nor do I think we should, because that is a genuine response to things, but that has more impact than the intellectual response on the other side, on the losing side. Mm-hmm. So that would seem to our writer to be unbalanced coverage, but I don't know what that you're saying, Alan, that we didn't cover adequately the societal change over the last dozen years while the Defense of Marriage Act was in effect.
I think it was happening. Mm-hmm. In other words, I think there was a growing awareness in this country. My children are 38 and 36, and they think it's total nonsense that you wouldn't allow people to.
But I think we've been covering it. In fact, I've gotten criticism over the last years at the Times Union from people saying, why are you always writing about those gay couples? You know, 10 years ago when we were doing profiles of gay couples adopting children, we got pushback from our readers saying, but we were adequately covering, I think, a phenomenal change in society that was, it's just that it happened very rapidly.
Isn't that true of most paradigm shifts, where there comes a moment when the paradigm changes, and it usually catches everybody by surprise.
Huh.
The paradigm had been status quo. DOMA was a codification of what already existed. All of a sudden, there's a paradigm shift. Society decides this isn't a big deal. For some people, it still is. But for the majority of people now, they don't care to be involved.
But it's almost not noticed. I mean, we had the same thing, Paul, with immigration. Yeah, you had Lou Dobbs on the air, raging and screaming, and everybody says, kill, 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 as Arlo would say. And then all of a sudden, everybody was for it. Or not everybody, but a clear majority in this country was saying, of conservatives who wanted the workers in the country, of people who thought it wasn't fair the way they were being treated. But change in itself is an interesting concept. That is what, and that attracts newspaper coverage and journalistic coverage change. As Rex has always put it in his inimitable way, if 5,000 airplanes land at the Albany airport safely, it ain't a story. But if one goes down,
one plane belly flops, there you go.
It is. Well, it's true, though.
You're all negative, you reporters, you know. That's what they say.
That's right.
But, God, I love to be quoted. Isn't that great?
Well, I love to quote you, Ray. and if I haven't told you lately that we really are so happy, no, really, that you're here with us. I mean, because, you know, you sit in the seat and you know your stuff.
Well, it's very kind.
He's saying, what is he up to
one,
now?
Yeah,
Wait till the promos.
Here's the stuff. Here's something. This is a moment when on this program we get to celebrate the fact that we're important, we in the media. Isn't that wonderful? We're important because a new study finds that 50% of Americans would rather know more about current events than fashion, sports, or celebrities. One in three say that they've even admitted to pretending to know about a news story to impress someone. So do we, by the way, think this is really true?
No.
No.
No, that's no. Two no's. Okay, so you say to somebody, do you think you should know as much about current affairs as possible? What, you think we're stupid? Yeah, of course, we all say yes. Of course we do. But then you say, the hemlines are going up this year. And somebody says, oh, well, you know, hubba, hubba, hubba. So that becomes much more interesting to us. Nevertheless, we know enough at least to lie to the pollster.
Well, and what actually concerns me is this views this as glass half full. This suggests that half of Americans would rather know more about fashion, sports, and celebrities than they would about current events, about the news. This is problematic.
Almost every research vehicle that's ever used modifies the behavior of the people participating in the research. It's just a matter of degree.
Oh, my God. You have become such... You used to be a humdum, you know, every day.
Just
get out
an
there
ordinary
and get that,
journalist.
Get out there and get that story.
No,
and
it's...
now, paradigms and this and that. It's unbelievable.
Is this man up for tenure?
Well, that's part of it. That's part of it.
No, Rex seriously. Accused me of being a professor on this program.
Seriously. You know, there was a study that was done on Ohio. It's actually a couple of years old. But they wanted to observe how people interacted with media. And the way they decided to go about it was they sent individuals with tablets over to people's houses and followed them around the whole day to see how they were interacting.
What kind of tablet? Like an aspirin tablet?
Well, it predated an iPad.
Oh, iPad. Tablet.
Yeah, some kind of tablet.
I knew that.
Well, I think they studied about 400 to 600 people. And in the course of the month that they were studied, even though some of them subscribed to the cable channel Cinemax, not one of them appeared to watch it after Friday night at midnight, when the fare on Cinemax has the nickname Skinemax. If you don't know what that means, go look at the
Oh,
the
in other words, they lied. They lied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because nobody wants
because
to be observed.
Because we know the only thing that has sold on television is sex.
Yeah.
Sex stuff.
Because nobody wanted to admit, while somebody outside their household was there, that they might engage in using adult content. All I'm saying is that example is... research will tend to modify the behavior of the respondents to some degree. It's just a matter of how much.
And while we're talking about this, Paulie, I will say that I had lunch one day, quite a while ago, with some experts from one of the cable operations. I'm not saying which one, because I don't want to get into trouble here. And they told me, and they were kidding around with me, and they say, we know exactly what you're watching from your house.
They do. No, they do. I don't think that's a big secret that the boxes dump the information.
Yeah, so they know.
The cable companies, otherwise they wouldn't put the channel up. Why would they even offer it for sale if people weren't doing something with it?
Yeah.
Although if you're paying the monthly subscription fee and you're not watching it, they don't really care.
Hey Rex, could I raise another subject?
Well, of course. Of course,
I don't want to be seen as religion bashing. Yeah. I don't want to be seen as religion bashing today. But as we speak today, there's a new story out which shows that Cardinal Dolan of New York City tried to shift some money from their regular accounts, asked the Vatican for the permission to do this from the regular accounts into the, I believe, the cemetery account, which would have been protected from any judgments against the diocese he was in at the time from having to pay for remediation because somebody had been sexually, attacked. Now, what's interesting about that is that the two tabloids in New York City, the Daily News and the New York Post, have gone out of their way to extol Cardinal Dolan from the first minute he came to New York. I think it has to do with demographics. I think it has to do with making sure that you get a demographic vote or readership that you might not otherwise have, and they are in fierce competition with this. So I'm going to be fascinated to see the way in which they play it. The New York Times, by the way, did the story. The way in which the tabs treat Dolan after this, because it appears, he may not have told the truth.
Anybody want to touch this? Are you sure that your perception is correct, that the tabs have been falling all over themselves?
I am absolutely sure. Mm-hmm. I'm absolutely sure. Yes, I'm absolutely sure of that.
Well, I often say when we hear a critique of coverage in New York City that it's different from anywhere else, that because we have America's best newspaper, the New York Times, and then we have two tabloids that are struggling to, they're fighting against each other.
One of which makes money, Pat.
One of which makes money.
The news.
But they're going after the same readership fundamentally.
Yeah.
And so they're not trying to be the same kind of news organization, and they're different from what goes on in any other city. You don't see anything quite like that. Philadelphia, you do have the Philadelphia Daily News, a tab that's really sporty.
How about Boston? Isn't there a Boston?
The Boston Herald, but it's, does it even still exist? Sorry. And the Chicago also has a tab, but they're not.
What about in Memphis?
So tabs are different. There's nothing like that in Memphis. Just the commercial appeal and
send us some ribs.
Yeah, that's a great thing. But it is an interesting phenomenon in New York. Do you think that there wouldn't be coverage that would at first be sort of like a honeymoon for a new archbishop when he's named or a cardinal when he's appointed? This guy in particular has a real affinity for talking with people. He's a real man of the people sort, isn't he?
Well, but I think my other point should be taken up by you two experts, and that is, do you think that newspapers are aware of demographic trends so that they know, for example, that we want Catholic readership or Jewish readership here, so therefore we are going to cover something in a way in which we get the people who are define themselves in that group.
Newspapers, TV stations, and those few radio stations that do news. I should point out here for listeners who don't know, Paul Conte, the third member of our panel here, is a longtime television news director. So he would
before
be an expert
he an
on
academic
this sort of thing.
And went uptown.
Learned to use
learned
those,
to talk the talk.
Paradigm shifts and all that kind of stuff. So two pennies for your thoughts here, Professor.
Do you mean do media companies study their audiences? Yeah, duh. is that less academic?
And go and Paulie, and go after, but by shaping the news in terms of this is news that this particular segment. I remember once when one of the stations in our area, Channel 6, decided that...
Which is the CBS affiliate in Albany, yeah.
Yes, mm-hmm. It used to be NBC, and then was CBS, really? Then there was
right.
Shifts. Okay.
Yeah.
So
years ago.
Yeah, yeah.
Before, when I was a child, I'm sure.
Go right ahead. Well, you are a young man. A young man.
In your 20s, you mean?
And remarkably well-preserved. but they decided, they took a look at their numbers, and they found out that sports, organized sports, weren't doing it. That only 12% of the people, who I think it was 12%, said that they were watching it because of that. But when they got rid of it and they got rid of their organized sports, they really hurt because 12% went somewhere else.
Well, also, it's very conditional upon when you ask that question.
Right.
In a vacuum, if you ask an audience if they care about little kids falling into a well as a news story, they're going to say, no, they don't. But if you then start to add details, well, it's a little girl. She gets trapped there. She's stuck in the well for a couple of days. They have to dig a tunnel down alongside, and they squeeze her through a small hole, blah, blah, blah. You know, so there are other things that shape the story that can make it more interesting. In a vacuum, if you ask subject matter questions, you'll frequently get responses that are predictable. Crime is a big issue for people, but it's really not crime, which often gets interpreted
it's
as...
It's a crime.
It's somebody could commit a crime against me. It's personal safety is really the issue, but it's articulated as crime. And they'll tell you, they don't care about political stories, except they kind of do care about political stories, especially when the political story impacts them.
And so, who's selling the potatoes also becomes important.
And Alan, you know this, your PhD is in political science. And,
yes, it is, Rex.
Yes, it is indeed.
And yours is in, I forgot, you don't have one.
What can you do?
One person at the table has one.
That's right.
Two
fine.
Do not.
Just never. We'll ignore my Ivy League degree.
Absolutely.
So it is actually one
you
of
are the
those
picture of Ivy League.
Issues that there are certain things that are voting issues for people that are not for others. So, for example, while abortion may be a voting issue for only 10% of the population, it is the issue that will motivate
exactly.
people to vote for,
exactly.
gun control being the same way. And the same thing is true of, for example, high school sports. We may find that only 15% of our readers care about high school sports, but they care so passionately that they will choose our newspaper over another one if they perceive our high school sports coverage is better than the other.
If so there was another one.
You discard that with concern. Of course, we really know that what motivates people to buy a newspaper is the crossword puzzle. All right?
Sure.
I tell people the story. Shortly after I'd become the editor of the Times Union, we needed to make some room for another feature on our comics page, and we were carrying two crossword puzzles. And I thought, how many crossword puzzles does a newspaper need? So I got rid of one. Well, I found out that the answer is you need however many crossword puzzles you have always published. You do not get rid of a crossword puzzle. But being a clever
or
man...
Or a bridge column.
I had thought, well, that was my fallback. I had thought, here's what I'm going to do. If there's too much pushback from the crossword puzzle denizens, I will just put it back on the comics page after I get a couple of days' experience. And so I made room for it by getting rid of the bridge column. Are we in trouble there?
Yeah.
So anyway,
it's like
we
the opera on public radio. Nobody listens, or very few people listen, but boy, are they passionate, the ones that do.
So you're saying that WAMC does pay attention to what listeners want, and you just sort of are catering to listeners rather than doing what you think is
to
right.
To which I would like to answer. Hum, 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 hum.
Absolutely. Here we are. Yeah. By the way.
No, but I'll explain for our listeners what this crossword puzzle enigma is all about. It's about the fact that a bunch of doctors came out years ago and said, if you want to avoid Alzheimer's, you do the crossword puzzle. So I know people of a certain age walk around doing the crossword puzzles virtually every day. So it becomes a lot more than just doing that. It really is avoiding the ultimate, I don't know what I'm talking about.
Let's just take the last part of that sentence. We'll put that in our promo. I don't know what I'm talking about. Comes now the news that Tribune Company has bought 19 TV stations. Ooh. They're paying $2.7 billion. This comes right after Belo Company. Gannett paid $2.2 billion to buy 20 big city TV stations from Belo. Belo publishes the Providence Journal and the Dallas Morning News also. The interesting thing about Tribune buying all these TV stations is that Tribune is trying to sell its newspapers, the LA Times, Chicago Tribune, the Hartford Courant, and Baltimore
pulling
Sun.
A fast one.
And so what is interesting to me, and Paul, maybe you can explain this to me, I have seen analysis, one after another, saying that TV stations are right at the point where newspapers were about 5 years ago with their digital presence. They have not really done enough on digital, whereas newspapers have gotten ahead of them in almost every market. And it does seem strange to me that people are spending a lot of money to buy TV stations if they're just now coming up on the crest of the wave of the digital revolution.
Yeah, it does seem strange. And before that, Sinclair Broadcasting, the owner of WRGB, bought a lot of television stations the week before that, or entered into an agreement. They actually haven't closed the transaction. These are all announcements, and it takes a little time. I think the issue, and this is conjecture, but I think the issue is that at the highest levels of the money game, the owners of these companies have determined that there's money to be made in electronic media. Hmm. And it's got more upside now than it did. Well, I don't know if it's just newspapers. I think the issue is that if you own these electronic assets, it's easier to be in the digital.
Did you know that every time you bang your hand on the table, it can be heard during this program? Okay, go ahead. I just thought I'd mention that.
Okay. Sorry.
I'm sorry. Sorry.
Sometimes I talk with my hands. But I think that the electronic media that they're buying is well positioned to participate in digital distribution so that there's an up value to having the bandwidth.
But also, you know, you never know what these geniuses are thinking in terms of how they're positioning themselves. For example, we do know now that automobile companies are coming out with self-parking cars and self-driving cars. Well, think about that for a minute. It doesn't really matter, does it? This self-driving car. You say, take me to Pittsburgh. Magnetic strip down the middle of the road takes you to Pittsburgh. What do you do then? You turn around and you watch television, which has never been allowed in a car, which is why FM radio survived in the first place, because you have to keep your eye on the road. Well, at the point at which you don't have to keep your eye on the road, why not? So maybe somebody's trying to do a little futuristic, which never works, you know, thinking on this.
Yeah, well, that's the Jetsons kind of thing, and I don't know that you ever
get that.
That's
way too dismissive, Paul.
I don't know if you ever get that far. I think in the more near term, they've figured out that you can easily hub stations. Do I need to define that?
Yeah, hub, so that you get Syracuse News in Albany.
Not necessarily that. You can merge the business offices, the sales departments, the traffic offices, and have one central location which covers 6, maybe 10 stations. And also instead of 7 or 10 separate control rooms where they insert the commercials and so on and so forth, you can now do that out of one location so that the cost of running these assets has decreased.
Are you all following out there?
I would just like to take note of the fact that a journalistic organization was just referred to as an asset and that hub was just used as a verb. It's all right. It's all right. We're going to be fine.
Yeah.
Well, we're out of time.
At least you know what a verb is.
We're out of time. Thank goodness. You're right.
A hub is a cap that goes on your car.
There you go. All righty, folks. We're going to have to leave the other issues. Paul Conte from the College of St. Rose, Alan Shartok from WAMC, and I'm Rex Smith from the Times Union. We hope you have had the patience to stick with us and that you will then come back next week.
Living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. When they know they've got a people's fight to wage. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, newspaper guild. Got a free new world to build. Meet the people, that's a thrill. All together fits the bill. Oh, newspapermen are such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the world. Now, publishers are such interesting people. Their policy is an acrobatic thing. They claim to represent the common people.
funny, Wall Street never has complained. Ah, but publishers have worries, for publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.